Are you looking for a comprehensive and convenient online health fitness training platform? Look no further than Vikido Fitness Academy. With a variety of programs designed to meet your needs, this platform offers everything from weight loss and wellness group coaching programs to an emotional intelligence course. You'll learn what to eat in order to achieve optimal health and energy levels. You'll have access to exercise training, live coaching meetups with myself, Dr. Vicki Haywood-Doe, and other instructors, as well as support and accountability throughout your journey. Whether you prefer to work out at home or at your favorite gym, Vikido Fitness Academy makes it easy to follow along with their programs. So get started on your journey to better health and fitness. Visit vikidofitness.com/VDF Academy.
The views and opinions expressed are for general informational purposes only. Consult with your physician or medical healthcare provider for medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment.
Today we talk about research articles and hot topics. Our topic today is What's New? Hot Topics number 98. A new study finds that antidepressants, sleep aids, and painkillers may dull the driving skills of seniors. Which of these meds should we avoid if we have to drive? Are you stressed or depressed? Mindfulness training could offer long-term relief. Celiac disease versus gluten intolerance. What's the difference? All this and more on It's All About Health and Fitness.
Welcome to It's All About Health and Fitness with Dr. Vicki Haywood-Doe and Dr. Virginia Banks Bright. This program is brought to you by Vicki Doe Fitness, a multimedia health and wellness forum. Now here's your host, Vicki Doe and D. Banks Bright.
I'm Dr. Vicki Haywood-Doe, and with me is the one and only Dr. Virginia D. Banks. So what's going on, my sister?
Hello, my sister. How are you?
I am fine. Yes, we were talking about how that the end of the year is almost here. We got Thanksgiving, Christmas.
It sure is.
And all
it
of that.
It sure is. I turned the corner the other day and I saw your steps were lined with the cute little thing on the other side. I was like, okay, I can't wait to see what Thanksgiving is going to look like. I'm waiting for the pilgrims.
Well, I don't know. We might not have pilgrims this year. We might wait until the Christmas stuff.
Okay, but I will. You're gonna do Christmas stuff too. Is he gonna decorate your house for Christmas?
He probably put some stuff out on the front, but I don't know if I'm gonna put up my trees this year.
I was gonna say, didn't you have five last year?
Yeah, I got about that many now, because it's what? I got five, one upstairs, two. So I'm not going to do any, I don't think I'm going to do any trees this time. I'm just going to put little cute, because we got little cute statues and little stuff around the house. I got to take a break, a sabbatical this year.
I understand. That was a mammoth undertaking last year.
Yes, it was. So no.
The thing is, you get them up, but then you got to take all that stuff down.
Got to take them down. Yeah, no.
Unless you're like me, they say you're ghetto if. So you're ghetto if you keep your lights up all year. So my lights are up all year out in the family. I just turn them off for a year and then click that button when it gets to be December the 1st. All set and ready to go.
Well, good for you. That's not That's not ghetto. That's just being smart.
Absolutely.
So you won't have to do that again.
Oh, no. Just click that button and those lights are up.
There it is. Click it and go for it, right?
That's it.
Well, today, this is episode 270, and we talk about research articles and hot topics that we think are worth looking at and talking about. And our topic today is What's New? Hot Topics number 98. There are some common medications, including antidepressants, sleep aids, and painkillers that may dull the driving skills of seniors, a new study finds. And so we're going to talk about which of these meds should be avoided if we have to drive, and stress. Stress can damage your heart health in many ways, study shows. And so the mind can affect a person's health. And we're going to talk about that as well. Are you stressed, depressed? Mindfulness training could offer long-term relief. We're going to talk about these articles and much, much more on this topic today. It's all about, on our podcast show, it's all about health and fitness, Vicky Doe Fitness. And as per usual, our co-host, Dr. D. Banks, will give us the latest on what is happening with COVID vaccines, flu, or just anything new that's coming to get us. You know, but if nothing's coming to get us, we'll like that too.
We could take a break.
And so she's going to talk about all the things that we can do, if anything, to protect ourselves and all that. So stay tuned to this episode. So what do you think, Dee?
Well, yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. Won't be part of our talk today, but maybe later on. There's a new disease in the country called Tsutsugamushi fever that's being transmitted by this like tick. And the interesting thing about it is that when we used to joke around about infectious diseases, when we would say, oh, you know, that's like we're going to get Tsutsugamushi fever, it was like some never happened in the United States, something that happens overseas. And now we're starting to see it in the United States. So you know what? I guess two things. I'm going to have a job.
Yes. Big time.
I'm going to have a job.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
And then we are intermingling with each other more nowadays anyway. So I can see how a lot of stuff that was overseas it's over here now. And I'm sure if we're over there, we're bringing some of our stuff.
Exactly.
Over there.
You know, these things are carried by mites and ticks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing for people to get on planes. You know, people are kind of like not that clean sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing on little, nobody checks. They check for your water bottle and all of that. But nobody's doing a mite check or a tick check or a mosquito check.
Yes.
So, and you can be from Dubai. I have some friends that are in Dubai now. In 14 hours, they'll be back in the United States.
Yep.
So it doesn't take long. You know, we can be anywhere in the world in 24 hours. So
that's it. So there it is, right? And so
there it is. It's a new day.
So yeah, it's a new day. So we have to just be kind of aware of all the stuff that's out there, right?
Absolutely aware. Yep.
All right. Yep. Well, folks, make sure you go to sign up for our newsletter and updates. Go to our website, VickyDoeFitness.com. And sign up where it says, you'll see the sign up. It says sign up for our newsletter. And when you sign up, you'll be able to stay in touch with the things that we're doing right here at Vicky Doe Fitness. Also, invite others to sign up for our newsletter as well, because when we launch or we promote any of our stuff online, our new programs that's on Vicky Doe Fitness Academy, my workshops, our services, you will be the first to know. And so we're gearing up soon in a couple of weeks at the end of the year so that we can go into our new year slamming, like they say. We're gearing up for one of our popular programs. It's our 7-day health reset challenge. And so we're also gearing up for that. But also when you sign up for the newsletter, we send out periodically, we send out healthy tips and tidbits for you to follow and look at and encourage you so you can stay inspired to live a life of health and wellness. So make sure you sign up for our newsletter today. Go to www.vickydoefitness.com. And as always, what do we say, Dee?
Thank you for your support.
Thank you for your support. Well, Dee, like we said, Thanksgiving is around the corner and the year is out. I was talking to our lawn guy too yesterday. I was like, man, every time I see you, you got all these leaves to get up in the front. But he was saying, and I didn't think about it. He said, yeah, but if you notice in the back, those leaves are still green. They haven't changed. So I thought that was weird. He said, yeah, he's been finding that in a lot of the homes and stuff, that some of the trees will be almost all the leaves are down and everything. And then in that same area, he'll look up and the trees leaves are still green. So he was saying, he was saying it's going to be interesting to see how our winter is really going to be this year. You know, are we going to have really bad blizzards, or are we going to have just maybe one? And then the rest will be relatively okay. So that's interesting.
I'm okay with one and the rest relatively okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, because I said, knowing my luck, I'm always having to drive in the mess.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, and with these roads and streets and stuff like that, I don't feel like getting out there with all of that.
No.
You know, it's just too much angst.
It is. And then it's, you know, especially if it's icy and all of that. So no, I'd rather just, well, I know what they say. I'd rather just hunker down.
Me too. I'd rather just hunker down. Me too. I'm okay with hunkering down. Oh yeah.
Just hunker down, right?
Yeah, my friend in our practice wanted to know if I wanted to go to another hospital out in Boardman. And I'm like, no, I'm good. 7 minutes from the hospital is just great for me.
Great,
I'm fine.
Right?
I'm straight.
Right? So if you got to slip and slide, you just slip and slide
for seven minutes, as opposed to having to go all the way over to Boardman or Poland or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that's
crazy.
I
know. I know, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I can't.
So this week I got a chance to go down to Kent State University and hang out for a couple of days. They added a new wing to the aeronautical and engineering department. And it's very impressive because it has these real high ceilings. And that's because they are practicing and doing the drones. You know, you got to have so much feed, and, you know, it's licensed and this and that. It's a whole thing that they had to go through. And so they got these real high ceilings for the practicing and teaching of the drones and so forth. And then they got a bunch of AI stuff. I mean, it's very impressive. The big 3D printings.
Yeah.
And,
oh, wow. Nice.
And all of the gears. So they're saying that. Yeah, with the aeronautical engineering, or even with that's their next project with the airport part, with the aviation part. Most people forget about the engineering, and no, this is that whole, you know, flying and all that kind of stuff. You know, they have a whole fleet of folks that are behind the scenes on the ground taking care of a lot of the stuff. You know, even building of the planes and stuff. So
Wow. They
took us through that, the whole new wing, and it's just big and just impressive.
Oh, wow.
But a lot of folks, you know, because we are worried about the enrollment, but it's a lot of folks that are coming and they're enrolling into the aeronautical and engineering program at Kent State. So that's a good thing, right?
That's really a good thing. You know, you were mentioning rules and regs. Those drones have to be registered with the FAA because, you know, with planes and stuff flying up in the sky, those drones have been known to have all kinds of interference and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's great. You know, Kent State's always been very innovative. They've always been on top of their game and bringing in new and innovative stuff to their school, to the university.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I was really impressed. I was like, whoo.
Yeah.
I said, if my brother T was here, he would have had
a nipsham
fit. He would have
loved
it. Yeah, it was something. But
good
yeah.
For Kent State. Good.
I know. And then we listened, you know, we had a little dinner, and then we listened to some of the students. They gave a three minute vision or shout out of the different research that they are doing.
Uh-huh.
And so it was very neat. It wasn't just from the aeronautical engineering department. They had one lady that was she started out being a dentist in Iran, okay, and then she came over here and she's big time in the fashion department. So she was showing all her fabric and stuff that was really unique. And so yes,
great.
And so then they had, it was an African sister, and she was in I don't know biology department, something, one of the biomedical sciences or something, and she was presenting her research and stuff, and it was just interesting. interesting to see these young folks, you know, and they be talking all this innovative stuff. And when you listen to their age, they're less than 30. Wow. They're in their young 20s. So it's a good thing.
Wow,
it's
great.
It's refreshing to see, don't you
it
think?
It is. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
good.
She's pre-med, good. So that'll be good for her good. To go into medicine. But yeah, that was that. But that whole building is impressive. And they building a lot of stuff down there.
Are they?
Yeah, they about to do the new business administration building. You know, they working on Whitehall. Remember Whitehall, the College of Education? They're working on building new wings and stuff on that as well. So, yeah.
Well, go ahead, Kent.
That's what I said. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Kent State. Good.
It's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. But good. Yeah, that's what I was doing. So how was your week, though? What you doing?
So, you know, I think a lot of people saw on Facebook, on Sunday, I went to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So that on Monday, I could help represent the infectious disease. There were about maybe 10 of us that came to D.C. on Monday, and we were all assigned to individual, I call them handlers, advocacy people on the Hill. And we were all assigned, most of us were assigned to our congressman in our own state.
Okay.
So I was assigned to the two senators from Ohio, J.D. Vance and Sherrod Brown, and about four or five of the congressmen from Ohio.
Okay.
One of which was two of them, Joyce Hannah Beatty, whom I knew. She's a Link sister.
Yeah, in Columbus. I've been
Columbus. Yes, and Amelia Sykes, who just got elected. She's from Akron. But I didn't get to see any of them. The only congressman, I met with their staffers, and the only congressman that I got to see was Bill Johnson, who was from this area. And the reason that I was there was to lobby for Congress to appropriate more monies. Well, a couple of things, to try to talk to them about how poor the workforce is in infectious diseases. And we found that out during COVID. Mm-hmm. Everybody's burned out. So you're going to have to do something to try to get more doctors. Number two, you need to increase the pay, because infectious diseases is fourth from the bottom of compensation. Number three, you need to really pay attention now to antimicrobial resistance, because a lot of these organisms have, you know, been exposed to these antibiotics over time, and now they're resistant, and we're coming up with a lot of problems where we don't have drugs to treat people.
Oh, wow.
So, and it was kind of interesting because at that point, it didn't make it Democratic or Republican when you're grandmother's in the hospital in the ICU with a bad wound, and she's been on antibiotics for 4 or 5 weeks, and then she's got another infection, and now it comes back showing that she's resistant to everything. That's not Republican or Democrat.
No, it's not.
So we just need to get the pharmaceutical companies to bring in more antibiotics, but they need some kind of monetary incentive, because the pharmaceutical companies today, their dollars and research and development drugs are going to cancer drugs. Mm. And I'm glad, because you know, a lot of cancers now, you're living long with a lot of breast cancer, lung cancer. A lot of these cancers, you know, are being significantly improved by these drugs. So they're not making a lot of money off of antibiotics. They're making it more off of these cancer drugs, which are doing great things. So that's what I did. Got to see a couple friends and stuff while I was there.
That's
the
nice.
The weather was great.
Yes.
And Washington, D.C. is always a beautiful city.
It is. It is. Yes. We have
always a beautiful city. I'm just always marveling at that city, how beautiful it is. Yeah.
I know. It is. And it's always hopping, isn't it?
It is always hopping. And, you know, people there are, you see people walking and riding bicycles and running and walking their dogs and just being out. I like that.
Yes.
You know, that's another reason that I like coming to that city.
I know. It's just really, really bustling and doing stuff.
Yeah,
I like
really
it.
Bustling. Yeah.
Well, that's good, Dee.
So it's good. Doing a little bit of advocacy, a little bit of good in the neighborhood.
That's it. That's right. So what is going on this week, Dee?
Everything, Vicky.
Well, you know, I thought about talking about that November is National Healthy Skin Month because, you know, we always forget that the skin is the biggest organ in our body.
Sure
and
is.
We do need to periodically check and see if we got some moles or some
pretty
something.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yes.
We have to do
much.
That. Yeah. And so, yes, this is Healthy Skin Month. And the American Academy of Dermatology designates that each November, it is our National Healthy Skin Month. And it's a time to pay attention to your skin, learn about skin care, and adopt habits that can lead to a healthy, to a lifetime of healthier skin. And even your nails, because nails are a part of that. Your hair, you know, some people have thinning of hair. You know, a lot of times your thinning of hair or certain things with your scalp is a sign of something too. And so, yeah, pay attention to that. And the AAD, they launched the first National Healthy Skin Month. It was way in November 1997. And since then, it's become an annual event in which the AAD and dermatologists, they emphasize the importance of good skincare, and they share tips that can lead us to doing what we need to do for healthier skin, hair, and nails. And so they're asking us, you know, to make sure that we ask all of us, our Americans, to pay close attention to your skin and to adopt healthy habits to care for your skin, hair, and nails. And so who can participate in this National Healthy Skin Month? Well, everybody. Everybody needs good skin care, from newborns to people more than 100 years old. We still need to think about skin care for everybody. And that's why it is everyone's awareness month. Not only this month, even though we talk about stuff that's put on the spotlight for this month or whatever month we are promoting, we're saying this so you can continue on throughout the year monitoring your skincare. And so to help you keep your skin looking its best this November, the AAD is spotlighting unsafe skincare trends. Now, there's five of them on the website, and some of them I was like, what? But I've just brought out one. But I remember one of them that was the very first. It was saying, don't do your own procedures. They're saying on social media, folks are doing these microneedling and doing all these procedures themselves.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Who does that? Oh.
Apparently it's a trend. So yeah, so that's that. But it's a lot of stuff that they were talking about. But I picked one of them, and that is skipping the sunscreen. Because a lot of times I have to remind myself to go in there, you know, and put some sunscreen and stuff on. But yeah, skipping the sunscreen, to use or not to use sunscreen. And that's another topic that's been trending on social media too. Dr. Sabriski says, I've seen a huge rise in anti-sunscreen sentiment on social media, which is quite concerning. A significant number of people are posting about the harmful effects of sunscreen and claiming that most sunscreens lead to cancer or contain cancer-causing ingredients. These claims aren't backed by science. And so the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, which regulates sunscreen, says, given the recognized public health benefits of sunscreen use, Americans should continue to use sunscreen with other sun protection measures. This FDA recommendation is based on current scientific evidence, and the science doesn't show that any sunscreen ingredients currently available in the United States are harmful to human health. And so that's why the AAD recommends that people, they protect their skin while outdoors. And here's some things that they say. You can seek shade while you're outdoors. You can wear protective clothing, including long sleeve shirts, pants, a wide brim hat, and sunglasses with UV protection. You can apply a broad spectrum of water resistant sunscreen with an SPF of 30 or higher to all skin not covered by clothing. And when it comes to sunscreen, there's scientific evidence that using sunscreen and other sun protection measures can help to prevent skin cancer. And so your dermatologist knows about skincare. And so that's why you probably need to go to a board certified dermatologist and check on your skin, hair, and nails. Harmful skincare can take a toll on your skin and sometimes your self-esteem. And so you need to get trustworthy advice, and that is to go to a board certified dermatologist, and you will find trustworthy skincare advice from a dermatologist, a board certified, on this particular website, and it's www.aad.org. That is their, that's their go-to, the dermatology website. And so what do you say about that? What is it, the American Academy of Dermatology?
One thing I wanted to add was that the confusion that people get around when they go and buy these sunscreen products and they see that SPF, just to make a comment about that, what does SPF stand for? Sun protection factor. So people are like, well, should I get the 20? Should I get the 30? Should I get the whatever? And I wanted to remind myself and the audience about what that means. So sun protective factor, which is that number on the cans, rating only refers to the ultraviolet light. And the ultraviolet rays of the is that kind of radiation that causes sunburn, changes in skin, and can contribute to skin cancer. So for example, if you buy SPF 30, it blocks 97% of the UV rays. If you buy a sun SPF of 50, it blocks 98, and an SPF of 100 stops 99%. So probably not that big of a difference in 100, if you can get 100 or 90, but some obviously is better than than none. But the other thing that I wanted to also mention too, that's a big myth, is that Black folk don't think they can get skin cancer. And that's kind of been a myth that, well, you know, only Caucasian people get skin cancers. And I try to make a habit of going to, I think they say that you should try to go to your dermatologist at least maybe once every 6 months, 7 months, just to get yourself checked over, because a lot of times you can't see things on your back. Black people do get malignant melanoma. When I was in training, there was always this myth that Black people don't get skin cancer and Black people don't get malignant melanoma. Well, we do. And, you know, they can, obviously malignant melanoma can be extremely harmful, and skin cancer can be, if it goes further, can be bad, but mostly it's just a nuisance of having things taken off your skin. So I just wanted to add that to what you were saying about, and the dermatologist is often the forgotten doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll go to the cardiologist, we'll go to the OBGYN doctor, you know, we'll go to maybe even neurology. Mm-hmm. But most of us don't make a habit of going to our dermatologist. Just you do, don't you?
Yeah,
you
I have to, because I got, you know, stuff that I have to be making sure with my eczema, make sure I'm doing how I'm supposed to do so I won't have any breakouts and stuff, you know. So, but yeah, you have to though, right?
I've been trying to do that more, get an appointment to see my dermatologist more often than not, because those myths are not true. And that's, like you said, it's the biggest organ, you know, and sometimes lesions hide on your leg. You know, there have been instances of people finding skin cancer lesions on your leg where if you're not really looking, you know, you obviously have missed it. So yeah, mm-hmm. just something else we need to think about.
Yes, always something to check on, right?
Always. It's true. Always something to check on, Vicki. Always.
Gotta check
My
on
goodness.
This. Gotta check
you
on
gotta
that.
Gotta check on that. You gotta check on this. You're absolutely right. You could make a week of just getting yourself checked.
I know, right? That's a whole trip to different
check.
Places.
I know. Then don't throw in ENT, your dentist, and all of that.
That's it. But we got to do it, right?
Yes,
we do. Well, I did want to say how that Ohio voted to legalize the possession and sale of marijuana by 57%. So we shall see what the outcome's going to be with that.
Yeah, I said on Facebook today, what cannabis I say about it.
I know.
What cannabis I say about it.
That's it.
So I don't know what to say. You know, I did have a conversation with our friend Herb Washington, who has one of the franchises, and was talking to him a few weeks ago about the implications of what this is would be for him if it passes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still not sure. I guess the, you know, things will shake out in terms of what happens to those proprietors that have those franchises for marijuana, and then also what the implication is. For example, I think that people have often said, I mean, if you're in a job, you're still going to get fired if you use marijuana and get tested for it.
You best better believe
it. Don't get it twisted.
Do not get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. And I'm not even sure whether in Ohio you're going to be allowed to, like in California, walk down the street smoking a joint. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, the laws are going to have to be sorted out. But for sure, understand that if you're in a job and you test positive, you're out.
Yeah, it's so, just like with alcohol. You know, you can
right.
you can
legalize, but you know, OVI, you gonna lose your license.
That's it. You know, so yeah, it's gonna be interesting how that
it's
will
gonna
play.
Be very interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, how that's gonna sort out. But yeah, that Ohio had some interesting results last night. But that's the source of another topic.
Yes, it is. All right. So yes. what's the late? Do you have something that's coming to get us?
You know what? Everything's at a mild calm this week. COVID's at a mild calm. Didn't hear anything. I did a Zoom for a big leadership conference yesterday that I did in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
As well, I did it from here. But right now, nothing's new on the horizon. They're still trying to get vaccination rates are extremely low. And I get it. People are vaccine fatigued. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that, you know, people need to talk to their physicians. People are asking me about RSV vaccine. I say, talk to your physicians about whether you feel that you're in a high risk group. You know, for children, yes. But for RSV vaccine, I think you need to talk to your doctor to see if you're at high risk. And COVID vaccine, I took it because I'm in close proximity. Mm-hmm. And we're still seeing people pop up with COVID, but okay. we're not seeing anywhere near what we saw, you know, 2 years ago, people coming in the hospital on us being overwhelmed by it. So thank goodness for that.
I know. Thank goodness. All
yeah,
right.
Thank goodness for that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dee.
You are welcome.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Vicki Haywood-Doe. I just wanted to break in for a quick second and introduce to you the sponsor and creator of this show. It's the company I own, Haywood-Doe Consulting Co., doing business as Vicki Doe Fitness. We are a health and wellness consulting company that specializes in designing and implementing medically integrated applied exercise physiology-based fitness wellness programs, initiatives, events, health promotion, and health education for special populations such as older folks, children, adolescents, overweight and obese individuals, women's health, and those who have chronic diseases. We have a team and network of healthcare professionals based out of Northeast Ohio, and we've worked with many companies, schools, churches, and organizations. If your goal is to transform your life by taking a holistic approach to living a life of health and total well-being, get in touch with us at info@vickidofitness.com. To find out more about our own site and online programs and services, go to vickidofitness.com. And now back to the show. Well, today we talk about research articles and hot topics. And our topic today is What's New Hot Topics number 98. And so you're going to take the first article, right, mm-hmm. Dee?
Yes.
Okay.
So this article, seniors, here are the meds that can harm your driving skills. And I'm a senior citizen and happy about it. Mm-hmm. Happy about it. But as we get older and as you are older, I'm not saying this is for everybody, but sometimes you tend to take more meds for your aches and pains and sleeps and so forth. So seniors, this article is Health Day. Mm-hmm. Seniors, here are the meds that can harm your driving skills. Common medications may impair seniors' driving skills. The drugs include painkillers, antidepressants, and sleep aids, according to a new study that tested seniors' road skills for 6 years on average. Some common medications. I learned some things, Vicki, from this article. Mm-hmm. Some common medications, including antidepressants, sleep aids, and painkillers, may dull the driving skills of seniors, a new study finds. Many different medications classes have been linked to the risk of driving impairment. As anyone who has ever read the label warning, do not operate heavy machinery. Mm-hmm. The new study took a particularly rigorous approach to investigating the issue, following older adults up to 10 years and testing their driving skills with annual road tests. And it turned out that those using certain classes of meds were at greater risk of failing the road test at some point when older folks were taking either antidepressants, sedative, hypnotic, sleep medicines, NSAIDs, like ibuprofen and Aleve.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either. They were nearly three times more likely to get a failing or marginal grade than non-users. The findings do not prove the medications are to blame, said lead researcher Dr. David Carr, a specialist in geriatric medicine at WashU's School of Medicine in St. Louis. It can be hard, he said, to draw a direct line between a particular medication and diminished driving skills. Is it that drug or the medical condition it's treating or another medicine an older adult is taking? In this study, though, Carr and his colleagues were able to account for many factors, including participants' medical conditions, memory and thinking skills, vision problems, and whether they lived in more affluent or disadvantaged neighborhoods. Healthcare disparities.
Yes.
Again.
Again.
Again. Social determinants of health.
Again. Yes.
As certain medication groups were still linked to poor driving performance. Beyond that, Carr said many of the medications in question are known to act on the central nervous system with potential side effects like drowsiness and dizziness that could affect driving. Unfortunately, he added, during busy time-constricted doctor visits, discussions or medication side effects may fall by the wayside. That's true. So that's where patients need to be proactive, Carr said. Ask questions about potential side effects when you get a new prescription. And if you're wondering whether your sluggishness or other symptoms could be due to a medication, talk to your healthcare provider. We wouldn't want anyone to just stop taking their meds on their own, Carr stressed. Talk to your healthcare provider about any changes. That point was echoed by Jake Nelson, Director of Traffic Safety Advocacy and Research at the Nonprofit Automobile Association. The good news, Nelson said, is that your doctor might be able to make some changes, like switching to a different medication or adjusting the dose or time of day you take a particular drug. Don't feel like you're being burdened by asking these questions, said Nelson, who was not involved in the study. This is about putting your health and safety first. He also stressed, however, the role of the pharmaceutical industry in tackling the issue. There are better ways, Nelson said, to alert medication users to the risk of driving impairment, which is typically buried in the fine print. The study published September the 29th in JAMA Network Open involved 198 adults who were 73 on average at the outset. None had signs of cognitive impairment. That means problems with memory, judgment, or other thinking skills. Study participants had annual checkups, which included a road test with a professional driving instructor for up to 10 years, about 5 years on average. During that period, 35% received a failing and marginal road test grade at some point. Seniors on antidepressants, sleep aids, or NSAIDs were at heightened risk. The odds were greatest for those on antidepressants or sleep meds, as you might imagine, with 16 to 17% putting in a poor road performance per year overall. That compared with rates of 6% to 7% of their peers not using these medications. Antihistamines are notorious for making users drowsy. Anticholinergic medications are used to treat a range of conditions from overactive bladder to COPD, chronic obstructive lung disease, or Parkinson's. They can cause side effects like sedation and blurred vision. But Carr said it's possible that older drivers in this study were using newer, non-drowsy antihistamines. There were too few people taking anticholinergics to detect a significant effect. No matter which medications they may be using, Carr said, older adults should talk to their doctor about any red flags, like feeling drowsy or slower to react, or having a close call on the road. And you can get more information from AAA, has resources on safe driving for seniors. Yeah, you know what? I was driving back the other night, which I, again, lesson learned. I don't think I'm going to be driving that late at night anymore from the Pittsburgh airport. First of all, I noticed, you know, with my cataract surgery, I'm still having glare problems.
Okay.
And you know, with these roads being all twisted and turned, you know how you read about one-way drivers?
Yes.
They're turning off these roads and turning on these ramps, yes, and different ramps, and you're not familiar with it.
Yes.
And you don't see wrong way or whatever. Yes. And you're looking every which kind of way, and people are right up on your butt when you're driving.
Yes.
I see how people do wrong way driving.
Yes.
And it just scared me so much. I was driving the other night from the Pittsburgh airport to the Canton area and had to go through all these back roads, Steubenville.
Yeah,
and all,
yes,
these rounds.
I remember.
Said, no, I'm not doing this anymore.
I remember when I had to drive
these ramps,
through Steubenville.
These are terrible.
Yeah, that's Steubenville. I remember years ago, I used to have to drive through there and you can't see nothing.
You remember
nothing.
That? Vicky, it's terrible. I will not be going through there anymore.
You can't see nothing up in there, especially when it's dark.
And the roads are twisting and turning and twisting and turning. And then there are people that are familiar with those roads that are on your butt with their lights
glaring
in the background. It's not safe. I won't be doing that anymore. So I can, and this is without any drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine if you the least bit had any least bit anything, I can see how drivers make these mistakes and how these wrong way accidents happen.
Mm-hmm.
I clearly understand.
Yes.
Yeah. That Steubenville is a trip. Oh no, I won't be going through there.
No, it's awful. Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah.
And how were you going through Steubenville? Did you have relatives down there?
Well, years ago when I started the radio stuff, I would go because Dale had he owned a radio station and it was in Steubenville.
Oh, wow.
So it was on Sunset Boulevard. That's the street it was on. And so I would drive there and then sometime I would come back late at night and no.
Don't do that anymore. No. Those days are over.
Mm-mm. It's awful.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm.
Well, at least we found out that we got to be careful with some of the stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't
know
about
NSAIDs.
I know.
Who knew?
So there it is. I guess we got to be careful.
Yeah.
With anything that we take.
With anything, really.
With our driving. You just don't know. All right. So our next article is talking about celiac disease versus gluten intolerance. And a lot of people always ask me what's the difference, and there is a difference. There is a difference. Now I'm gluten intolerant, and so I can know my levels, so I'm allowed to cheat. Now celiac disease, if you got the disease, you ain't trying to cheat, because you get really sick over time. You get sick. But anyway, so this was written in October Health Day News, and it says that for most people, there's no reason to give up your gluten for good. But that's not so easy for folks with two gluten-related medical conditions. That's celiac disease and gluten intolerance, according to Dr. Sarmad Sami, a GI at the Mayo Clinic Healthcare in London. He offers some details about this protein and the two health conditions. Gluten is a protein. It's found in grains, including wheat, barley, and rye. That's why I never could drink beer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In people with celiac disease, eating it triggers an autoimmune reaction that causes cell damage to the small intestines. That reaction can cause diarrhea, fatigue, weight loss, bloating, and lead to serious complications, Sami said. Gluten intolerance is more common, he added. In gluten intolerance, there is no cell damage or inflammation. It's more of a sensitivity. That's the major difference. It's more of a sensitivity, even though some folks say there's no such thing as food sensitivity. So, you know, it's a lot of contradictory stuff there. But gluten intolerance is more of a sensitivity. Gluten doesn't agree with me, Sami said in a clinic news release. If you eat gluten and have an immediate reaction such as diarrhea, that's more likely to be a gluten intolerance than celiac disease, which is a slow process that you don't tend to feel immediately. A sign of gluten intolerance or celiac disease is having one or more gastrointestinal symptoms such as diarrhea, bloating, or heartburn. Mine's is bloating. immediately.
Oh, wow. Really?
Immediately. That's why it's a gluten intolerance. But anyway, yeah. So diarrhea, bloating, or heartburn that diminish or disappear if gluten is removed from the diet. These symptoms then return if the person begins eating gluten again. It is important to be tested in case you have the more serious celiac disease, Sammy said. Those who have gluten intolerance may be able to cut back on gluten-containing foods rather than having to eliminate them completely, Sammy said. It depends on the intolerance level. Some people may be fine by halving the gluten intake, while others may need to cut down more, he said. It's different from celiac disease, where you have to be strictly, completely gluten-free. To diagnose celiac disease, doctors start with a blood test to determine whether the body views gluten as an invader and reacts by generating high levels of antibodies. After a positive blood test, an endoscopy can take biopsies to check for damage in the small intestine. We typically recommend that people should not be on a gluten-free diet if they are being tested for celiac disease, because that can create false negative results on the blood test, Sammy said. For most patients who have celiac disease, eliminating gluten keeps it under control, he said. Without a celiac diagnosis, there is no reason to eliminate gluten, he said. There's no evidence that a gluten-free diet by itself is healthier, Sammy said. It's not about the gluten. Take a biscuit, for example. It's more about the fat and the sugar in the biscuit rather than the gluten. So what does this mean for you? Well,
I was wondering, Vicki, for you, what does this mean in terms of, so are gluten's more caloric or more carbs, or is that a dumb question? Because I'm always wondering, is gluten-free less calories, fewer calories, or can you not look at it that way?
Well, probably shouldn't look at it that way, but most times if we worried about gluten, we worried about pasta, bread, and all that kind of stuff, right? Which is the carbs, right? Which is the high processed carbs. And here's the deal. For folks that are sensitive, like for me, I can do sourdough bread, but I can't do the other bread. Isn't that kind of weird?
So you can't do rye or wheat?
No, cannot do that at all. Yeah. And when I cheat, then stuff happens. So I've been cutting down on my cheating because, see, I'm getting eczema on different patches and stuff. So I can cheat a little bit, but I usually try not to cheat because, like you said, most of that stuff is bread, cakes.
How about lentils and beans? Pasta. Are they gluten or no?
Lentils.
Because I know you have, like beans.
Yeah, lentils and beans are okay. But, some beans do get on that list. I have to look. Yeah, even with brown rice, sometimes that kind of, it depends.
Yeah.
It shows up on the gluten. Even oatmeal, some people say, oh, well, it's not gluten, you know. So you kind of have to just go by.
You probably have to get a list, because I've often wondered, you know, should you go on a not gluten-free, but lower gluten diet? What it would be any advantages, but of course it would decrease the carbs.
But
sure.
Lentils, I'm looking at, yeah, lentils okay. are considered gluten-free. Yeah, they're naturally gluten-free, but then you got chickpeas. Yeah, they're gluten-free in general. Most of the beans are gluten-free. Let me see. Some beans may be, let's see, gluten-free beans include, but not, yeah. So it's a lot of gluten-free beans. It's how it's processed too. That's why, you know, like they were saying, you know, we've always known oatmeal sometimes show up on the gluten thing.
Yeah. Well, just while we're talking, I was looking up a couple others that are the new, you know, foods that people eat. Like farro is gluten.
Yes.
Quinoa is gluten free.
Yeah. So quinoa I eat because,
wow.
Yeah, it's considered. Yeah. So it's just weird. You just got to kind of know.
That is weird.
Yeah. So it's a lot.
I'm going to have to look into that more, because sometimes I do have digestive tract issues and so forth. And you do wonder whether or not it's related to, you know, as you say, you don't talk about food sensitivity, but I do think about, and I do sometimes tend to order the gluten-free pasta, but it's tougher. You know, it's not.
Yes, I don't even.
You know, it's not even. You can't like change what's. You can't. If you're going to just eat pasta, you're going to eat pasta or just don't eat it.
Yeah. Now, pasta, I cannot eat at all.
Wow.
You will never see me eating spaghetti.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't do that. Pasta, I can't do.
Now, no ravioli or lasagna or any of that.
None of that. I would have to take the stuff off.
Interesting.
Isn't that funny?
Interesting.
So it just depends on the people. And so certain things I always tell Natalie, okay, well, taste that bread. Is it worth cheating? No, Mom, it doesn't taste good. Okay, thank
now, what
you.
What about like traditional African foods like jollof rice? How about rice? Is that gluten?
If you look on certain lists, you know, rice can show up on the gluten thing. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and if you notice, I don't do a lot of rice because of what it does. I can always feel when I'm getting, because I have these little pings.
Yeah. Like we call them prodrome. You have some kind of little prodrome that lets you know something's getting ready to happen. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you don't see a lot of stuff that I be eating.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's not really silly. It's just complicated.
Well, you have to be very careful, especially if you go out. You got to know what you're eating. It's hard. You know, when they ask you about special diets, you more than anybody else would have to say, I can't eat this and I have to have this.
That's it. So you have to just sometimes like you notice, if I think it's going to mess me up, I just don't even eat it.
You just eliminate it. Yeah.
No, just pass.
Right. Pass. Exactly. Our famous pass.
That's it. The next was what? Stress.
So I'm going to take the next one. Stress can damage your heart health in many ways. Studies show. So what are some of the takeaways here? This is also from Health Day. The mind can affect a person's heart health. Depression, anxiety, and chronic stress can contribute to heart problems, a pair of new studies argue. This came out recently, November the 6th. Mm-hmm. A person's mental state can have a tremendous impact on heart health, two studies report. Depression and anxiety accelerate the development of heart risk factors like elevated blood pressure, high cholesterol, or type 2 diabetes, one study found. And the second study found that chronic stress was associated with development of heart disease and clogged arteries. There are clear associations between psychological health and cardiovascular disease risk. These studies add to a growing body of data we have on how negative psychological health can increase the risk of heart and brain disease, said Dr. Glenn Levine in an American Heart Association news release. Levine chaired the writing of the association's 2021 scientific statement on psychological health, well-being, and the mind-heart-body connection. Researchers are scheduled to present both studies at the association's annual meeting, November the 11th through the 13th this week in Philadelphia and online. Research presented at meetings is typically considered preliminary until published in a peer-reviewed journal. For the first study on mood and heart health, researchers analyzed data on more than 71,000 adults gathered from 2010 to 2020. They found that people diagnosed with anxiety or depression developed a new heart health risk factor about 6 months earlier, on average, than people without a mood disorder. Depression and anxiety increased the risk of a heart attack, stroke, or other major event by 35%. Further, the accelerated development of heart risk factors explained about 40% of the link between mood disorders and major heart events. The researchers also found that those who were genetically predisposed to stress tended to develop their first heart health risk factor about a year and a half earlier on average than those without higher genetic risk. Harvard Medical School said in the release, "The fact that genetic analysis supported the clinical findings was intriguing and provided further confidence in our results." The second study looked at 2,700 adults without existing heart disease taking part in a Dallas Heart Study who were followed for 12 years on average. Participants filled out a detailed questionnaire. That's what I wanted to know. How is this depression and stress and all that measured? Because when I go to the Cleveland Clinic, I have to fill out like 5 or 6 pages of
they
stress
do ask
and anxiety.
That now.
Detail. Not just are you depressed, but have you thought about doing this and do you consider this and blah, blah, blah. So these participants filled out a detailed questionnaire about everyday sources of stress, and researchers integrated their responses into a cumulative stress score for each person. That makes more sense. That's more scientific. The stress score was significantly associated with the development of heart disease, even after researchers accounted for other risk factors such as blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, and cholesterol. Stress was associated with a 22% increased risk of plaque buildup in the arteries and a 20% overall increased risk for heart disease. Now, I'm going to finish this article, but the only question that I asked, Vicki, if I was critiquing this, did they look at their diet simultaneously to doing this?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a person like you would critique it and say, well, what was the diet like?
Yeah.
In addition, were they eating more stuff to cause more plaque and all of that? I digress. But anyway, previous research has shown, well, these are the kind of scientific things that you have to think about when you're looking at articles, right?
Those are confound variables that come mess up the truth. Yeah.
And you have to at least mention it, or you got to, you know, the physician like me would say, well, are they eating more cholesterol-containing foods? Or what was their diet like? Or, you know, meat or whatever, not just stress. So what was this up against those things? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Stress was associated, like I said, with a 22% increased risk of plaque buildup in the arteries and a 20% overall increased risk for heart disease. Researchers said stress appears to directly affect physical well-being and also causes people to make poor lifestyle choices that increase heart health risk. Previous research has shown that the hormones released by chronic stress, like cortisol, can affect blood sugar levels, inflammation, and other systemic risks to the heart, researchers noted. There is indeed a mind-heart connection. Taking care of your mind can impact your physical health as well, said stress study researcher Dr. Ijoma Ilezu. She's a cardiology fellow at University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. It would be great to see more patients talking with their physicians about their stress levels and more physicians screening for a high burden of stress in their patients, Ilezu said in the release. And that way we can work together to combat poor outcomes. First of all, that ain't gonna happen. Doctors are not gonna sit and listen to a patient.
No. Not.
That is not going to happen.
That's where they need to get with some type of health coaching fitness program with the correct folks that are doing that along with the doctor. Because doctors are stressed out anyway to do the acute stuff.
You're talking, preaching to the choir. You come in there talking about your stress. I'll probably have you looking at me on the couch and tell me about your stress. It'll be a role reversal. The patient will be saying, well, doc, wait a minute. Hold up here now. Let's talk about you. You know?
That's
that
funny.
Ain't gonna happen.
Right. So
that is not going to happen. No, doctors are stressed to the max as it is.
And so a lot of the latest talk is, and that's true, the latest talk is having a lot of the doctors are trying to have on their team, and they do sort of kind of have it, is to have the health coaches, the dietitians, the fitness folks, and all of that, most especially the health coaches like us that are taught how to do the health and wellness thing. Yeah. So that they can refer their patients, because they really don't have time, but it will help with compliance so that when the same person come back, they can see great results. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that's something. Stress. Yeah. That stress that's been really diagnosed and researched a lot, how stress can pretty much kill you. It can. And so that's where mindfulness come. You know, we always talk about mindfulness.
You do.
Yes. And so
Dr. Wayne Smith.
That's it. Wayne M. Smith.
Dr. Wayne M. Smith.
Stressed, depressed, mindfulness training could offer long-term relief. And this is written also in our Health Day News article. And you can find it on their website as well. And so what are some of the key takeaways of this article? Well, in-person teacher-led mindfulness courses were tied to a reduction of psychological distress in a new study. Researchers reviewed the results of 13 prior studies and finding small to moderate improvements in stress and anxiety. But they emphasized that mindfulness apps and podcasts are no substitute for in-person group therapy. And so that's why it's always good to do some kind of in-something in person. Well, this article was written in July, And it talks about the centuries. It says the centuries old practice of mindfulness is having a moment in present times. And a new study finds the therapy can improve mental health for at least 6 months. Analyzing the results of 13 prior studies, the UK researchers concluded that in-person teacher-led mindfulness courses were tied to reduced stress and anxiety. Mindfulness was the seventh step of the Noble Eightfold Path in Buddhism many thousands of years ago. And lots of different cultures have used different variations of this, said Dr. Yvette Sheline, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral research at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. There are many cited benefits of mindfulness, which is defined by UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center as maintaining a moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and surrounding environment through a gentle, nurturing lens. Mindfulness training is offered in over 600 companies globally and 79% of U.S. medical schools, according to background notes with the new study. And it's estimated that at least 5% of U.S. adults have practiced mindfulness. Although there has been previous research on the topic, this is the largest and most reliable study so far confirming that these courses work for the average person, said study co-author Giletta Galanti, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Cambridge in England. For the study, Cambridge researchers pooled and they analyzed data from 2,371 adults who participated in trial mindfulness-based groups or programs. Around half were in programs that last for 8 weeks with one session a week. The rest did not participate in the mindfulness programs, and that was the control group. The scientists found that 13% more participants who were enrolled in these courses saw a small to moderate reduction in their psychological distress compared to the control group. However, Sheline, who was not part of the study, said it's important to note that the study excluded those that were suffering from more severe mental illnesses. Although some studies have done that and have shown a big effect in more severely ill populations as well, she noted. Galanti also wants to look into mindfulness for a wider range of people as next steps for the study. An important next step is to try and predict who is going to benefit and who won't, she said. We have looked into this a bit and found that none of the following determine that someone will benefit more or less, and that's age, gender, education level, or mental health and mindfulness levels before the course. And as there are other things that people can do to improve their mental health, we need to find out who benefits the most from what. These days, there are a myriad of apps, podcasts, and books that people interested in mindfulness can use to practice. But Galanti said they are no substitute for in-person group therapy. Our research has not looked into practicing mindfulness on your own, so it is important that our research results are not used to promote solo mindfulness practice, she said. Solo mindfulness practice has much less evidence than teacher-led group-based courses. We don't really know if solo mindfulness practice benefits people on average, Galanti explained. The key here is that we know that sharing experiences with a group in a safe space and having a teacher to trust and interact with are more very likely to improve mental health already, apart from any effects of the mindfulness meditation practice itself. And in fact, we are not too sure that mindfulness meditation practice in itself has an effect. There are mixed findings, she added. Fortunately, classes are generally affordable and accessible in most cities, said Sheline, and they can come in a variety of forms. There are many, many different iterations of this. So mindfulness is one thing. Another is just progressive muscle relaxation. That's something you can also try. It kind of gets at the same kind of thing for transcendental meditation. That's a really interesting meditation too.
Yeah.
Sheline said, the motions of yoga or Tai Chi with a very slow, thoughtful movement is another way of doing the same thing. All these different ideas are related to the same basic idea of focusing your mind in such a way that you're focusing away from stress towards just being still in the moment. And so this study was published a while back in July 10th in the journal Nature Mental Health. So what does this mean for you? Well, it means that group mindfulness programs are accessible and affordable in many communities, and they provide relief from less severe mental distress. And so let's check it out. Also, it means to me that we need to get some research on doing, following these, you know, meditation and mindfulness, solo practice and all that. We need to get some research to see, you know, how helpful these are. Don't you think?
I agree. Yep. We have to measure everything because you just can't dash out there and say, well, this works without some kind of measurement or how has it been looked at kind of thing.
Yes. But in the meantime, mindfulness is a good thing, right? To relieve,
yeah, it is.
To relieve your stress and anxiety. Yep. Yes, yes. Well, Dee, that's a lot today, but it was It was a great show, and this ends our show. So do you have some tips that we should think about?
Yeah, just to kind of recap, the first thing I started out with was medications that, you know, we often talk about polypharmacies of older adults, and that's something that I want to throw in here as well. You know, I look at sometimes when I see patients and you ask them what drugs are on, and they have no clue. They just have a whole big box of medicines that they're taking, and they have no idea about drug-drug interactions. So I want to add to that, you know, medications that patients, that elderly patients take can cause driving impairment, including some of those that we didn't even know about, like NSAIDs, and then of course, antihistamines and sleep medications and antidepressants. But sometimes patients' medications may have drug-drug interactions with some of those medicines that may exacerbate sleeping and being, you know, not at your best driving. So you need to talk to your pharmacy about all your medications when you go to the pharmacy and make sure that there are no, pharmacists are trying to do a better job of that, but just make sure that there are no drug-drug interactions with those. The second one was a really good article. Made us start looking up a bunch of things about celiac disease and gluten intolerance and gluten-free. Celiac disease is an actual disease that causes autoimmune phenomenon, you know, skin problems, digestive problems, bloating, weight loss, fatigue. And there's a you make the diagnosis by blood tests and then doing endoscopy with small bowel biopsies. And a lot of times this disease is, the new thing is it's being more diagnosed in adults. It used to be a big disease when I was in my training in children. Mm-hmm. But a lot more adults today are being diagnosed with adult celiac disease than have been in the past. Third one is the article that I talked about with stress causing heart disease. And, you know, again, we know that as your last comment said, the stress can kill you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we need to be, and that ties into your last article about what things can you do to help minimize stress, like mindfulness. I think one of the points that you brought out was that in the article, we're not sure what solo training does, but we do know that teacher-led, or there is evidence to show that teacher-led mindfulness activities help minimize stress.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, the teacher-led. One of the examples was when Professor Wayne M. Smith was doing it at our past Healthy Heart, Healthy Living event. And that's an example of a teacher-led mindfulness group practice. And what makes it so great is not just the mindfulness and the moment-by-moment practice, but it's the social support. So
correct.
That's the key.
It's like Alcoholics Anonymous or Weight Watchers or those group things where people feed off of each other, where they get, you know, they get their energy from each other in these organizations where you have that social dynamic thing. And that's one of the things that COVID had impacted, is that there was that decrease in, that's why we're having more studies are coming out, more problems with mental health illness and more problems with stress and depression and all that, because people did not have that socialization that they were used to. They couldn't go to AA. They couldn't go to Weight Watchers. They couldn't go to TOPS. They couldn't go to all these other things that they used to, mindfulness thing, yoga classes, and all those things that they will draw energy from to decrease their stress, anxiety, and depression. And that is one of the things that COVID created.
Yes, and so that social support. So
right.
A question was asked with me just the other day, actually. They were like, oh, so I see that you have a lot of your programs online. Can I just, but I have to join the if you notice, it's a whole program. It's not like you can just go get the stuff by yourself and follow it. And I said, none of my programs online is something that you can go and follow it, because that won't be successful. That's why we have incorporated in our programs on Vicky Doe Fitness, our Vicky Doe Fitness Academy, any of our programs, it has the social support. So weekly, I don't care what you're doing and you're following the modules or you're following the exercise treatment, you know, we want you to do the live meetups, because it's that social support. It's that, you know, leading people. You've gone to some of my webinars. It's just
sure.
people together doing stuff. It makes a difference.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even though a lot of stuff online, you can still think about having one aspect of it where you meet live somewhere in there, and that'll take care of some of that social support, you know, because we still need it. We're touchy-feely people.
Yeah, we are. We absolutely are.
That's a good thing. And yes, I will be careful when I do. Well, I'm real careful anyway when I do my ibuprofen, because I'm living.
Me too.
I'm living with a nephrologist, and he always say, drink plenty of water. You messed up your kidneys doing that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And sometimes I will have a lot of my back pain and continue to have it because I don't want to be gobbling NSAIDs.
That's the key.
Nephrologists talk about that all the time. And not just that, with GI tract problems.
GI tract, right.
Yeah, bleeding is another biggie. No, so I try to be a little bit more stoical when I have that rather than gobbling those pills down. So no.
Yes. So now we got another thing to think about. We got to make sure that we don't be trying to drive any long distance or whatever.
No, I know. Who knew?
I know.
Oh, yeah.
But that's why we talk about these articles and things on our podcast show, right, Dee?
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
All right. And as always, for more information, go to our website, VickyDoeFitness.com. And remember, if you have any questions, comments, or just something to say, tweet us, email us, go on Facebook, and share with us your thoughts.
You've been listening to It's All About Health and Fitness with Dr. Vicky Hayward Doe and Dr. Virginia Banks Bright. Vicky Doe is owner of Vicky Doe Fitness, a multimedia health and wellness forum, a place to discuss, learn, and participate in healthy living. You can get in touch with Vicky by email at info@VickyDoeFitness.com.